Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Tom Green. Looks like, according to the website, there are 10 tickets left. A last-minute release of 10 tickets left for Tom Green tonight at Rumors Comedy Club, the 10:30 show. You can buy them online at rumorscomedyclub.com. You can also give them a call at 204-488-4520. And if you happen to be at the hockey game today, you might run into Mr. Tom Green at the Winnipeg Jets game. He will be there this afternoon.
I'm thinking of lines to use from the movie Road Trip, but most of them are inappropriate.
Yes, all of them would be inappropriate, so I suggest you probably would avoid that.
There's no doubt in my mind that Tom Green is going to go up to Michael Remus in the press box.
He's not in the press box.
He might be.
No, he's not.
Well, he's going to come up to the press box, and he's going to go up to Remus and say, I'm a big fan of yours on the warm-up show with Hustler. Can I have your autograph?
Unleash the fury, Remus.
Anyways, Tom Green at Rumors Comedy Club tonight, and there are a few tickets remaining. We're encouraging you to tweet us at Illegal Curve your comments about what ails the Winnipeg Jets, what ails where you think Dustin Byfuglien should be playing. Friend of Illegal Curve, Ryan Blight, makes a point that Brent Burns, a guy who has jumped from defense back to forward and forward back to defense for the San Jose Sharks, has 13 points in his last 13 games, mostly as a forward. Barry Saunders thinks that we should trade Buff. He should be someone else's problem. Should get a hefty return for Dustin Byfuglien. I don't think that's necessarily a pun, but it could be. Lots of comments coming in. Tweet at us, at Illegal Curve, and of course we'll give away a hat at the top of this hour.
Now, we talk about Byfuglien, you know, as he talks about Brent Burns, and Boyle's eventually going to be leaving San Jose, and they're going to need to move Burns back to defense. So I think, I mean, that's my opinion. In terms of Byfuglien, you know, we talk about possibly thinking about moving him in the offseason, whether he gets in better shape, and, you know, maybe Jacob Trouba comes up, and whether or not he's able to handle a big load. The issue is, now, they don't have Jacob Trouba. So, I mean, you take Dustin Byfuglien, and you put him up at forward, and then you're putting Grant Clitson on your second pairing.
Can I just interrupt you for a second? Are we in agreement in this room that wasting a year of Jacob Trouba...
Yeah, oh yeah.
It would be stupid at this point?
Well, let's get... Here, I know you're digressing here a little bit. Jacob Trouba's not playing today. We should mention that. There's a good chance he won't play. He might only play the last few games of the year when the Jets are officially out of it, if they are. Let's not, you know, right now get that out of the way. I don't think the plan is to play Jacob Trouba for 10 games, or pardon me, the last 9 games of the year. So if anybody thinks he's going to be in the lineup today, it's not going to happen.
It shouldn't happen. We don't know that it won't happen for sure, but I'd be shocked, and it wouldn't make any sense logically.
Yeah, I'd be surprised. I think Paul Friesen wrote about it in The Sun that he talked to Red Berenson, and I believe he was slated to play five games or less.
You know, Red Berenson, the head coach at the University of Michigan.
Yeah. The famous Red Berenson.
Yes,
of course. Now, in terms of back to Byfuglien, you know, it's a hole that's created based on the defensive group that they have. So you put Byfuglien up, it doesn't only maybe not add offense or add offense, but you have to understand what it takes from the back end. Not only offensively, but the replacement player who's going to be playing there. And I think as a whole, it doesn't really make any sense. Now, in terms of in the offseason, it may very well make sense. Obviously, you know, what his desire, where he wants to play and all that stuff is a factor, too. But, I mean, it's not out of the question, too, and I think we had a tweet about it. It's not out of the question to talk about the possibility of moving Dustin Byfuglien in the offseason. I'm not a Dustin Byfuglien basher by any means. I think he's a very talented player. But, you know, asset-wise, the Jets' strength, you know, they don't have many strengths, so the strength is likely on the back end in terms of depth, in terms of offensive depth, offensively talented defenders. And it may be, because first of all, you know there's a market for him, and that's what happens is when you eventually are able to draft and bring your own players in, it can create a market for other players on your squad. Maybe it does make him a viable trade candidate. I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
And it would certainly get you the top six forward that you've been craving.
Absolutely.
You know, nonstop since this team came to Winnipeg. We keep hearing about the hole on the right side and the top six. You know, personally, I like Dustin Byfuglien, and I would keep him around. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly going to net you, like the tweeter said. It's going to certainly net you a hefty return.
Hey, well, and you know, Drew, they talk about the right side. I mean, the team has a need up the middle, too. And I realize that Mark Scheifele and there's hopes for Bermistra, but they have a need up the middle, in my opinion. So,
well, I think that's pretty clear. I mean, Brian Little's not a real Spotify number one NHL center.
Yeah, and
Olli Jokinen is a, has got will have one year left under contract next year, and he's not a number one center.
And you can also move Little to the right wing too to fill that right wing need. Now that leaves the question of whether or not him and Blake Wheeler are number one right wingers. That's for another day though. And back to the Buffalo issue. Right now, I mean, he giveth and he taketh away. And if he's going to be playing defense on a consistent basis, first of all, he doesn't need to get in shape just for offense. He needs to get in place shape for defense, too. But it's not only that. It's will he... You can only cater to a player so much. And I realize in some senses, every player needs to be treated a little bit differently. But at some point in time, like, I like that Claude Noel. I don't like that he moved into forward at that point in the season, at that point in time, without practice and all that stuff. I do like that Claude Noel benched him. Because it's enough already of losing your man in front or not caring or lollygagging back. There's a couple plays where he's just like, he doesn't even make an effort to get back. You know, he's 2-3 strides and he glides. And at some point, you know, these guys get paid a lot of money. And I'm not saying they don't care, because they care. But the way to get at them is to take away their ice time. And if you want to make, put them in the press box, sometimes even keep them on the bench, locked to the bench during a game. That's how you get at players. That's the control a coach has. And I like how Claude Noel, I don't think he does this enough, I like how he's using that control to say, hey, Dustin, enough is enough. And I think, honestly, if you ask Claude Noel, give him a little truth serum, he probably wishes he did it a little bit earlier, but he did it, and I give him credit for that.
And I want to mention something as well, Drew. I know you have something to add here. I think Dustin Byfuglien is going to come out today and have a bounce-back game, and I wouldn't be surprised if Dustin Byfuglien has a key goal, winning goal, if he's in on a goal. I think his game will be a lot better, because I know that Dustin Byfuglien himself, not that I've talked to him, but that he's not happy with the way he's played, and I wouldn't be surprised if he bounces back, because I think he knows it's gotten a little out of control. I think, the coaching staff of the Winnipeg Jets knows that he's not in the best shape, and they know that they have to be careful with how many minutes he plays. He can't play 35 minutes a game, but I think just with his effort over the last week, 2 weeks, I wouldn't be surprised if he has a really good game today.
An angry Dustin Byfuglien seems to be a more effective Dustin Byfuglien. And I was listening, yep. Dennis Bayak, who's going to call the game here on TSN 1290 later this afternoon. Uh-huh. I think he was on with H&L yesterday. And I thought he had a great point. He said, some players, when they're not playing at their peak, you can still notice them and they're still moderately effective. They may not be as good as they have been, but they're still noticeable and they're still okay. Dustin Byfuglien's a guy, when he's not playing well, is playing so poorly that it's almost woeful, and he's sort of a peak or a valley kind of guy. He's not a middling guy, and to me, Blake Wheeler's also somebody like that. When Blake Wheeler's going well, he's really up there in terms of talent and everything else. But when he's not playing well, when he's fighting the puck,
I agree with that.
He's really bottoming out.
Yeah.
Those two guys are sort of like that. Whereas a lot of the other guys in the NHL, not specific to the Jets, can still be effective in some manners.
Right, and to Dustin Byfuglien's credit, in his defense, he's been responsible personally for, winning a lot of games. And,
for sure.
It's time for someone else in the lineup to step up. I mean, Olli Jokinen or Nikolai Antropov, they can
Antropov's out of the lineup.
Well, I'm talking about the Jets season as a whole. They could have stepped up, to a certain degree as well. Of course, Andropov is out of the lineup, but there's a lot of guys on this team that have not replaced what Dustin Byfuglien has given them. And Richie's point about maybe Dustin Byfuglien moving to forward, if he loses weight, I think that's a lot of ifs. And I think realistically, if we're talking about this a year from now, I see Dustin Byfuglien playing defense again, but also once in a while playing forward. But as far as moving to forward permanently, I just don't see it happening, because I don't think he has enough speed. But I know what Richie's saying, that it should maybe be an option, if certain things happen. Truba developing into a top four defenseman, that's a good point. But there's only so much Dustin Byfuglien can do, really. And I think that you notice it more, and we're talking about this so much because other guys haven't stepped up. I mean, I think that is something that we have to factor in. I mean, Tobias Enstrom, brings a lot on defense, but, does he have that game-changing ability that Dustin Byfuglien has? I would say on a lot of nights he doesn't. And, with the exception of a few players, Someone's got to step up here. And I mean, you can only have so many one goal games. I mean, they've averaged a goal and a half over the last 2 weeks. Somebody's got to start scoring.
I think that's the biggest point and reason for the segment is the talent level that's there. Dustin Byfuglien is as naturally talented as any Jet on the roster. You know, I really do believe that he can shoot. He's got great vision on the ice. He can handle the puck. He's big and he's strong. And, you know, there's not a lot of guys with a natural talent level like that. So to be able to harness that is the key. And, you know, obviously, again, part of that's on the coach. Part of that's on Charlie Huddy. Not just Claude Noel here. It's a coaching staff. We talk about Perry Pern all the time. Charlie Huddy coaches the defense. And that's his responsibility.
And for as much praise as Charlie Huddy has received for the way he's developed Zach Bogosian.
Yeah, and he's developed Zach Bogosian. But I think there's some criticism needs to be leveled over at Charlie Huddy in terms of the kind of stagnant development, I think, of Dustin Byfuglien at times. And I don't know why. And I just think it's that talent. And I don't want to necessarily say untapped, because it's been tapped, but it's just not always there. And it's an overall discipline. And getting back to the weight, that's one thing. I mean, Rick Dudley signs him to the contract when he acquires him. And I don't think it can be understated, guys. I don't think it can be understated. And Rick Dudley signs him to the contract after acquiring him from Atlanta, and he was in Chicago.
From Chicago, you mean?
Yeah, and he was in Chicago, Rick Dudley. So I mean, he's known him essentially throughout his whole career. Gave him the big contract, and I mean, I'm not actually sure by the CBA rules if you can institute a rule regarding or a contract clause regarding weight. But I know in other sports it's been done.
In the NFL, there's weight clauses a lot of times where you get a bonus if you clock in or if you weigh in at less than certain number of pounds.
And I'm not sure, a look at the CBA, whether or not that's something that can be applied in the National Hockey League. And, you know, hindsight's 20/20. But I bet you if you were to ask Rick Dudley or obviously now general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff, they'd like for a clause like that to be in place, because the difference, if you look at the Stanley Cup video with the 2010, the Hawks beat the Flyers.
Yeah.
And if you look at the video, they showed it at one of the recent Jets games, you know, Byfuglien scoring in the final there. A lot smaller than he is now, and he wasn't a tiny guy then. And at the end of the day, that hockey is, in this day and age especially, hockey's a skating game. And it's not like he's a bad skater, but now he's become a very slow skater. And when you can't keep up, it limits what you can do. And when really it is in your control. Like some players just technically aren't good skaters. They're just not good skaters. I mean, they just can't get around the ice that well.
Something in Mark Scheifele, the knock on him was his skating when they drafted him. He's been working on that.
Which he's improved. But there's certain guys who just don't get around the ice that well. And Byfuglien can. He just doesn't
You don't do it as quickly when you're carrying an extra 20 or 30 pounds.
Yeah.
And we're not saying he has to be in perfect, weightlifter, bodybuilder shape. But when you're carrying that extra weight, it affects everything.
I mean, Drew Doughty isn't exactly, Fabio here.
Right.
But
Mario Lemieux was never Fabio, but it never affected his game.
Too much, exactly. Yeah.
Well, aside from Richie, who really is Fabio?
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. When we come back, we're going to tell you who leads the NHL in minor penalties. Minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We want your tweets at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. It's not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty, get in touch with him, 230-6129. One more time, that's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. Or you can find him online at davidjohncarr.com.
Give David a call, but not right now because he's in Las Vegas.
Okay, thanks.
It's true.
Okay, I didn't know that.
I mean, give him a call when he gets back from Las Vegas.
I understand. Or you can just leave him a voicemail now.
Yeah, exactly. Leave him a voicemail because people have voicemail.
Maybe he'll answer in Las Vegas. You don't know that.
It could be.
Yeah,
it
go ahead, Drew.
You're never away from your phone.
Actually, call him
agent.
In Vegas, whatever.
Yeah. One member of the Winnipeg Jets leads the NHL in minor penalties that have been assessed against him. That player We found this out and tweeted this out yesterday on our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve. That player is Evander Kane. He leads the NHL with 21 penalties taken in 39 games.
Minor penalties.
21 minor penalties taken in 39 games.
He's got a major penalty fighting Alexei Emelin as well. Mm-hmm.
That's right. But major penalties are a separate issue. This is he leads the NHL in minor penalties. 12 of those 21 minor penalties have been taken in the offensive zone when the Jets have been pressuring the opponents.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, Andrew Ladd was incorrectly criticized for taking penalties in the offensive zone.
Yep.
Why has Evander Kane skated relatively scot-free in regards to those penalties?
Yeah, I don't know, Drew. You know, looking over at all the 21 minor penalties last night, five of those are coincidental penalties, so those kind of get taken off the board.
Right.
Take it down to 16, because coincidentals leave you at 4-on-4. Or 5-on-5, depending on the penalty. But, you know, in terms of the offensive zone penalties, it's why is he somewhat unscathed? That's a good question. I mean, the penalties are pretty undisciplined penalties, too. You know, they're out of frustration, a couple of them, or they're unnecessary penalties, or careless use of his stick, trying to be overly physical. A review of the penalties demonstrated a significant lack of discipline on Evander Kane's behalf. And, you know, regardless of whether or not the power plays end up in goals or not, and a couple of them have, you know, the odds are, based on the Jets' penalty kill, that they're going to eventually end up in goals. And you also put your team down for 2 minutes. And I've written about this years ago in terms of penalties drawn and penalties taken. And we'll talk about penalties drawn in a little bit here. But you can't have this happen. I mean, 21 minor penalties is a lot. You're leading the league. Remember, you're leading the league. You're a
shortened season.
But you're a winger. And you're not like a pest, but you're a winger. You're a scoring winger. I mean, your defensive responsibility is slot below defenseman one, defenseman two, and center. So if you're a winger and you're leading the league in minor penalties, I mean, something's up. And to me, you, as a scorer like him, he's losing focus. That's what it demonstrates to me. And he does lose focus. Does he want to win? Yes. Does he show emotion? I like the emotion that he shows. But he also loses focus, and he needs to harness that in. And I know Claude Noel has spoken about that. But the fact, that's minor penalties as a whole. The fact that 12 of those 21 minor penalties are in the offensive zone, you cannot have that happen. You are, you know, as they say, 200 feet from your own zone. And the thing, the point is this. You know, and he's had some lazy ones, you know, against the Islanders and hooking guys from behind right around the hash marks of the offensive zone. Ezzy, you got to get through the neutral zone trap, whatever system they're playing. You got to get by the defenseman. You got to score. Those penalties are really reprehensible from a coaching perspective. And the worrisome part is lately they've happened just as much as ever. So what do you do? And this is another area for the Jets. Unnecessary penalties and maybe a lack of discipline on those penalties needs to be accounted for.
And I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, just two or three of these penalties have happened during this, you know, mm-hmm. goalless drought here. Evander Kane hasn't scored in five games. He's got one goal in nine games. You know, Richie, you know, you talk about, you know, passion. And, of course, Evander Kane plays with passion. And I mentioned the fight with Alexei Emelin. I have no problem with Evander Kane dropping gloves.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, Evander Kane doesn't have a problem with Evander Kane dropping the gloves. And I think that's fine. I mean, Jerome Iginla, you know, could score goals and he could fight. And that really gave his team a boost. But the reason why, you know, I asked Richie, you know, if we could talk about this, the minor penalties, you know, is because, you know, I saw it being a trend. And, you know, 21 minor penalties, 12 in the offensive zone, that is really shocking. And Evander Kane, to me, a lot of these penalties, if you look at them, and, you know, Richie mentioned what kind of penalties they are. They're hooking, they're slashing,
yeah, high
they're
sticking.
Tripping, high-sticking.
Yeah.
Just, you know, kind of penalties where he's not, you know, he's not really, they're lazy penalties.
Mm-hmm.
Let's call them
mm-hmm.
what they are.
That's right.
And it's because he's frustrated. Evander Kane is the type of player, he's got a unique skill set like Byfuglien. He likes to use his speed, go wide, come off the wing. He also is high up in the NHL in shots, if not first in the NHL in shots. He was for a while there. But I think he's frustrated with his production, and why wouldn't he be? He's got a new contract. And he's a guy who scored 30 goals last year. He wants to put the team on his back and be the leading goal scorer. But I think that there's other ways to go about it. I mean, back check. I mean, you know,
right.
Finish your checks. But taking these penalties and putting your team at a disadvantage is not the way to do it.
And he's a responsible defensive player, and he skates hard and to me, all three zones. And he, you know, he back checks and he does a lot of those things. And I like a good big player who likes to fight. I like when Thornton drops the gloves. I like when Getzlaf drops the gloves. I like when Le Cavalier drops the gloves. I like when Kane drops the gloves, frankly. I thought I like when he's expressing that emotion. But the problem is, you know, Drew, why don't you provide the listeners with a breakdown of these penalties? Because, you know, I think only a couple of them are in the defensive zone. And that
three of them are in the defensive zone. There's 12. So there's 21 minor penalties. Five of them are coincidental. Take away those five coincidentals. So now you're left with 16 minor penalties. Yeah. 12 of them are in the offensive zone. Three of them are in the defensive zone. One of them is a bench minor.
Yeah, that's another one I forgot to mention. So he got 12 penalties on the offensive zone, and one he literally got from the bench. He wasn't on the X. That was against Tampa Bay.
Do you think his yapping? I mean, because every single one of the penalties that's been called against him, he's stunned about.
Yeah,
do you think his yapping is affecting things?
And I watched all the penalties, and one or two of them were iffy.
Like the other ones were clear penalties?
They're pretty clear penalties.
It seems like he's hooking a lot of guys
under the arm.
Under the arm. Yeah. And then he gets called for the hook, and he throws up his hands and says, well, the guy's holding my stick. Well, the guy's only holding your stick because you've stuck it under his arm.
And that's the trick, is the player with the puck's going to put his stick.
You feel it there, you squeeze it.
Of course. And he gets the penalty off the bench, which is, you know, another one you can't have. He was off the ice for 15 seconds before he got that penalty. Yeah, you know, Drew, his yapping doesn't help, and I think that his yapping, to be honest, contributes to the refs. I think they're penalties, but refs will sometimes just not call penalties that occur. But if you yap all the time and you're on them and you're on them, the refs talk and they're going to take notice. And if you see the mannerisms, I think it was the Montreal game, if not the Islanders game, where he took a penalty and he tried to complain to the ref, and ref just waved him off. Like, you know, get out of here. 2 minutes for this and get out of here. They don't listen to him anymore. You got to rein him in. And I guess quickly, Drew, before we go to break, we got Anthony coming up. Do you want to just quickly go over, you know, he's played more this year than last year, and maybe the difference between his penalties drawn and taken.
Time on ice this game is 20 minutes.
This year,
is 20 minutes, 37 seconds. The increase is largely penalty kill and even strength, similar on the power play to what it was last year. Penalties drawn, 1.1 penalties drawn per 60 minutes of even strength ice time.
That's for our friend Gabe Desjardins there. So 1.1 drawn, which is, as you'll note, less than last year.
Right. Last year, he drew 1.5 penalties per 60 minutes of even strength ice time. So the penalties that he's forcing the other team to take is down. He's got 0.7 penalties drawn per 60 minutes of power play ice time and zero penalties drawn on the penalty kill.
It's reflective of his frustrations on the ice, and it's taking your best player off the ice, so it's making him less efficient.
I'll just sum it up for the listeners before the end of the segment, Drew. It quite simply is this. He took less penalties than he drew last year, and this year he's taking more penalties than he's drawn, and that makes him far less valuable player when he does that.
And largely, I think the penalties are frustration penalties, undisciplined penalties, and that's really the key.
200 feet from the zone.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Anthony Sanfilippo talks to us about the Philadelphia Flyers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, our very good friend, Anthony Sanfilippo. Anthony, good morning. How's Philadelphia Freedom for a theme song?
It's just as predictable as Rocky.
Yeah, really? I agree.
You guys would impress me if, like, you found, like, an artist who was from Philly and just played a song and be like, and had your listeners like, oh, well, I wonder why they're playing that song. But then you look it up and you're like, the artist is from Philly. Okay, that makes sense. That would show some good research on your part.
Anthony, what about if we played the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air theme song?
You know what? West Philadelphia, born and raised. It's where I'm from, West Philadelphia. Give you a little bit of a story. I actually grew up with Will Smith. He's a couple years older than me, but we used to play basketball at the same playground. I used to sit there and, you know, just a little bit in awe of him when he first was popular with his first rap album with DJ Jazzy Jeff. We're like, oh, my man, Will's doing really well, and now look at him. Now he's a superstar. So
what's Jazzy Jeff like?
Jeff was a good guy. I mean, he's not nearly as, he was always the cool one, like the laid back, you know, always had sunglasses on, you know, just was real chill. I mean, that was Jeff. That's how he was. Will was always gregarious. He was a trash talker on the basketball court. He was a fun guy, to watch, be around, but, Yeah, Jeff was definitely the quieter of the two.
Don't worry, Anthony. Drew is our Carlton.
He dance like Carlton?
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait to see that.
All right, this has been a hell of an interview already. Welcome. Anthony, we got to start with the before we get to the today's game against the Jets. We'll start with the moves the Flyers made on Wednesday, acquiring Steve Mason from the Columbus Blue Jackets. You know, how surprised were you at this move? Does the move really make much sense in your books?
It makes some sense. It surprised me a little bit, but not. I can't sit here and say it shocked me. I know they weren't thrilled with their backup goaltending situation. With either Michael Layton or Brian Boucher. I think that they were kind of looking for somebody who could maybe, if necessary, give Ilya Bryzgalov a game off or two games off down the stretch. It would probably be a good thing. Or in case there was an injury, have a guy who is an NHL-ready goalie. I think that's the best way to describe Mason at this point. But at the same time, you know, I'm a little the level of surprise was the way Paul Holmgren described the acquisition, saying that Mason is not only one of the two goalies this year, but one of the two goalies moving forward, and then he said, and let's just leave it at that, which kind of left the door open that Bryzgalov might not be back next year. And to say that publicly is for a guy who, even though he doesn't admit to it, who follows very closely what's in the media, I can only think that you know, maybe sends a strange message to Bryzgalov, especially for a team who's trying to get back into the playoff race. So that's where the surprise came in to me. You take a gamble on Mason, you give up Layton, who stinks, and a third rounder 3 years from now, I mean, whatever that is. So it's not like they gave up a lot to get him. And so you're taking a chance on a guy who at one time was considered a top goaltending prospect in the world, and now it's kind of fallen off a little bit. Maybe if they can work with him and get him going in the right way, it turns out to be a good trade down the road. So from that angle, I think it was a good deal, but I'm kind of surprised with how they approached it, how they handled it through the media.
Anthony, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the depth here. And, you know, the Jets and Flyers play today in Winnipeg at 2 o'clock. And Max Talbot's out of the lineup. And maybe you can update us as well in your answer as far as if Kimmo Tiimonen is going to be in the lineup and some of the other roster moves that Jets fans might see here in Winnipeg during this afternoon's game. Adam Hall was acquired, and he's going to kind of fill the role that Max Talbot was providing for the Flyers. But do you think that the Flyers are going to have enough depth to withstand the injuries and you know, make this late run into the playoffs here?
You know, a week ago, I would have told you no. A week ago, I didn't think that the Flyers were going to be able to find your website because they couldn't put three W's together. It ended up that they, you know, it's worked somehow. And with each game here that they've won, these four in a row, Boston, Washington, and then Toronto the other night, Montreal and then Toronto, they've gotten more impressive with each game, and I didn't think that was going to be possible. You know, you beat Boston, and you're like, okay, all right, that's Boston fell asleep on a team that's not in the playoffs. Then you have the great comeback victory against Washington, and it's like, okay, well, that showed some heart. Then Montreal comes into town, and you beat them again coming from behind, and you're like, okay, well, that's another good team. Wait, what's going on here? Then you fly overnight into Toronto where the Maple Leafs team is waiting for you, and you beat them in their building where you've struggled on the road all season, and you're wondering how they're doing it with these guys. But you know what? Every acquisition who was a head-scratcher, and they all were in a lot of ways, like, okay, Kent Huskins, here's a guy who's sitting on the, you know, hasn't played in a month. The Red Wings basically gave him away for nothing. They only get a draft pick, and it's a seventh rounder if the Flyers re-sign him as a UFA in the offseason. Probably isn't going to happen. Detroit got nothing for him, and he's been one of their most steady defensemen over the last three games. Adam Hall, he went from Tampa to Carolina to Tampa to Philadelphia in the span of, 3 weeks. There's a guy who really was without a job. He comes in, he fills a nice role for them against Toronto, kills penalties, basically knocks Joffrey Lupo out with a concussion. Jay Rosehill, who you trade for, is a fighter who hasn't played in the league in over a year, hasn't scored in 2 years, and he gets a goal in his first game. And then you call up Oliver Lauridsen, yeah, a defenseman who's a seventh-round draft pick who I saw earlier in the year during the lockout when I was doing minor league hockey, and it really did not look all that good. Looked pretty slow on the ice, and when I heard they were calling him, I'm like, oh boy, this is desperation at its finest. And yet the kid has not looked out of place in the minutes that he's played. So it's kind of amazing how those guys have contributed and done a good job, and the rest of the team has kind of come together around that, and it's been kind of crazy, but it's really worked out for the Flyers. Now, can they, over the last 12 games, keep this up and go 9-3 in the last 12? I don't know. That's going to be tough to do, because that's probably what they're going to have to do to make the playoffs, but there's no reason to doubt it at this point after the way they played the last four.
Anthony, were you surprised at all that the team traded Harry Zolnarchuk for Jay Rosso?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, Harry Z's a guy that's like a lot of other guys, come out of college, who can skate, they're really good wheels, plays with a lot of energy, can hit, doesn't have great hands, never going to be a good scorer. But, in this league anymore, you'd rather have a guy like that than a guy like Jay Rosso, who his role is kind of being weeded out in the NHL. But the Flyers were tired. I think that they just got frustrated. They were tired of not having a tough guy available to them, and teams running Claude Giroux or running Jake Voracek or hitting Kimo Tiepanen, and there not really being anybody available to exact any kind of revenge. So they said, we'll give up a kid who can skate a little bit, another team might like, for that energy role, and we'll bring a guy in who's going to be our cop. And even if it's only for the rest of this season, it will prevent the runs being taken at Giroux, and he saw it in Toronto. I mean, he went right after Colton Moore. Colton Moore is a guy who the last time the Flyers played the Maple Leafs was chirping through Laviolette, skated over to him and said, there's nobody on your bench except for the guy standing next to you who can fight me. And he was referring to assistant coach Craig Berube at the time. So it's just kind of crazy how that works. But so now that they got a guy who can drop the gloves a little bit, maybe teams won't take those runs anymore.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Anthony Sanfilippo. Anthony covers the Philadelphia Flyers for PhiladelphiaFlyers.com.
Anthony, there's been a lot of talk. I haven't seen the Flyers play a lot lately, but there's been a lot of talk that Luke Shen has kind of started to take the next step that maybe the Flyers thought he would when they acquired him. Can you talk a little bit about his game and whether or not that's true?
Yeah, it's absolutely true, especially since all the injuries. With Coburn going out, Bizarro's being hurt, and even Tiemann got dinged up a little bit last game. He's a game-time decision today. I think he'll play. He's the kind of guy who always has played through injury, so I think he's going to play, but I don't have that as confirmation. That's just my gut. But, being asked to fill in, Nick Grossman's been out, so Shen was basically asked to be the number two guy behind Kimo, and he's done a great job in that. I mean, he's still hitting, but not nearly as much as he was in the beginning of the season, and that's not a bad thing, because what he's doing now is he's being more selective in his hitting. He led the NHL hits last year, but yet he was ridiculed constantly in Toronto because he was constantly out of position. Mm-hmm. So what the Flyers basically said was, you're going to see yourself have lineup 10 to 15 hits a game. Instead of taking all 10 to 15, pick and choose the 5 or 6 best and at the right time, and that's basically what he's doing. So he's staying more positionally sound in the defensive end, and they're asking him now to play the second power play unit on the point, and he's actually developed a pretty good shot from back there. I'm not sitting here going to tell you Luke Shen's a number one, number two defenseman right now, even though he's playing that for the Flyers at this point, but I think he's a lot better than the number 5-6 that Toronto thought he was, and it maybe has an upside of maybe making it to being a number two eventually. Now, keep in mind, he's still only 23 years old, so he's still got some growing and some learning to do, but he's definitely been a pleasant surprise for the Flyers over the last 15 games.
Anthony, talking about Luke Shen, I think we got to talk about his brother, Braden Shen. Has he quietly just turned into a really dependable second-line centerman for the Flyers?
He's Mike Richards. If you look at their numbers, they're identical this season. I mean, he replaced Mike Richards. He's not the leadership kind of guy that Mike Richards was, but he plays an identical game. He's a two-way forward. He's got offensive talent. He hits a little bit. He had to grow into the defensive side of the game in his own zone. He wasn't as responsible last year, even at the beginning of this year. But when he went down to start the during the lockout to play with the Phantoms in the AHL, the Phantoms coach, of course, is Terry Murray, who is a longtime NHL coach. Mm-hmm. He is a defensive guy, and he focuses completely on the defensive side of the game. And I think Braden learned a lot from Terry Murray while he was down there, and you saw it since the league has come back. You've seen Ken be more of a two-way player, really playing a good game. Now they put him together on a line with Wayne Simmons and put space out there. He can actually take a few runs at guys and not have to worry about having his back protected because he's got Hart and Owen Simmons on the ice. So really, really going well for Braden Shen right now.
Final question, Anthony. In terms of, people always like to know, was there anything that the Flyers were in on near the deadline that you heard about that they were close but didn't actually pull the trigger and could have made a big impact on the rest of the season?
They had conversations with teams about a lot of different players. I mean, I know they were really close to Ryan Clough, but the Rangers actually had a bigger offer, and that's why he ended up there. I know they kicked the tires on Jagr and Bouwmeester, but the price was way too high on both players, and they didn't want to give up what they had. I know that they went into the deadline saying, look, if we can do something small that will benefit our future as well, then we'll do it. But at the same time, we're not going to give up any of our young players just to try and make a run here this year. They would rather have just said, hey, chalk up to a bad season and we're going to go at them next year than give up on a Sean Couturier, who was who everybody wanted. So the Flyers showed patience and didn't really get close on any deals that would have involved Couturier and just took what they got. And so far, so good.
Anthony Sanfilippo, the real Fresh Prince of Philadelphia. Thank you very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
If that becomes my nickname, boys, you guys are in trouble. Let me tell you that right now.
Well, we'll see what we can do about that. Anthony, enjoy the game. Thanks very much, bud.
Yeah, you got it, guys. Anytime.
Take care. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing proper equipment is a must. A proper fitting custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center is an essential part of your protection. You can get your own custom fitted mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or contact them online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. We've been looking for your tweets all show long at Illegal Curve, and we are going to award another Illegal Curve hat right now. It's going to go to at A.R. Herstein, who tweets at Illegal Curve and says he's a huge Evander Kane fan, but he has lost focus with nobody to play with. He won't realize his potential with the current crew of revolving line mates. Hard to argue with that comment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. It's certainly hard to argue with the fact that he's been... without a player that complements his skills. Not that he's the easiest player to play with, but I don't think the mix right now is anything close to what would make him, what would optimize how successful he can be.
Agree with you on that front. Let's spend the next 10 minutes or so looking at the math regarding the Winnipeg Jets either winning the Southeast Division or making the playoffs. Let me start with this question first. It's not strictly math related. Do you think a second team from the Southeast sneaks into the eighth playoff spot or the seventh playoff spot in addition to the division winner?
Unlikely, but possible. I mean, you're looking at obviously Winnipeg, Tampa, and Carolina. Carolina and Tampa have the benefit of playing the least amount of games in the conference, along with Boston, having only played 36 games. So you always have the boost in Tampa with the goaltending. In Carolina, I'm not so sure that's going to be realistic. But, the Jets are only 2 or 4 points ahead of those teams, but those teams have 3 games in hand. So, with Philly streaking here, Drew, and Buffalo's still hanging around there somehow, but Philly streaking in the New Jersey, the Islanders and Rangers, I don't think Ottawa and Toronto fall that hard. It'll be tough.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think one team is going to get in. I mean, the team with the best chance, well, I guess you could throw Tampa Bay in there, but I always thought it was Carolina. And, with their goaltending issues, they've lost 3 in a row. They're 6 points behind the Islanders for the 8th spot. That's going to be really tough to make up. And they have 12 games left as opposed to the Jets, who have 9 games left. But I know we're going to get into the Jets schedule, but I think, it's the Jets catching Washington, Richie, or that's it. Because, Carolina with 12 games left, you have to think they have to win 9 out of those 12 games in order to get in. A lot depends what these other teams do. Mm-hmm. But it's looking like one team. Right now, the bottom 3 teams in the East are all from the Southeast Division, which really shows you how weak that division is this year.
Jets have 9 games left.
Yeah.
you know, there's been talk that the magic number to getting into the playoffs this year is 52 points.
Mm-hmm.
Right now they're at 38 points, which means they're 14 points behind that streak. What record do you think the Jets need to go in these next 9 games in order to make the playoffs and or win the Southeast Division?
Yeah, no, it's 7-2. I mean, obviously that's 14, but it's 7-2, and you got to kind of win some in regulation here to make sure you have the tiebreaker. Now, they have 17 regulation wins now, which is more than a lot of the other teams they're competing with, but those teams have some games in hand. So you have to go 7-2 here.
Yeah. Richie, if it's not 7, it's 6.5, which is obviously not a number.
Well,
but
6-2-1.
It's in between 6 and 7 games. And, you know, you can, you know, nowadays sportsclubstats.com is referenced a lot for giving, you know, percentage odds, making the playoffs. And, you know, that's not, we're not going to get into it, but that's not an imperfect way of you know, describing or calculating. It's close, but, mm-hmm. I mean, they have to win at least six, maybe 7 games, depending on what the New Jersey Devils do.
Well.
Depending on what the Philadelphia Flyers do. But it's minimum 6. And when the Jets, you know, before the Jets lost to the Carolina mm-hmm. Hurricanes last weekend or around there, when they had, 15 games left, you know, or 14 games left, pardon me, we were saying that the Jets have to go 500 here and they'll make the playoffs. They won't win the division, but they'll probably make the playoffs. So what's happened? They've lost 5 games in a row. Now they still have to win 7. They've put themselves in a really difficult position.
I think they have to go 7-2. And if they go 7-2, they get 52 points. The New Jersey Devils have 11 games left. And they're at 39 points, so they need to get 13 points. Probably 14 because the Jets have a tiebreaker with them, right? So they have 11 games left, and they have to get 14 points. I mean, it's going to be tough, right? It's going to be like they get 7 wins out of 11 games. You get that 2-game buffer there. That's going to, you know, going to get you 14 points and get you 53 and get you over the Jets. I mean, those games in hand are obviously becoming a huge factor now. You look at Philadelphia. Philadelphia's behind the Jets by 1 point with 2 games in hand. Obviously, they're both playing. They're playing each other today. But, I mean, the Flyers even. And Buffalo seems close to out of it because they're 2 points. Well, not even. They're close to the Jets. The Jets are not in a good situation. And as he referenced Sport Club stats, and they're about 20% on there to make the playoffs. I still think you have to watch for Tampa. But to go 7-2, you still need breaks.
Things to fall your way.
If you go 7-2, you're not in.
7-2 and then hope for help from other teams.
Well, no, Richie mentioned...
I don't know. Ezzy, hold on a second. I don't know. Like, if you look at Washington, okay, Washington has 11 games left and they have the same amount of points as the Jets.
Washington's schedule over this next 11 games are undoubtedly harder than the schedule the Jets play.
But they're probably undoubtedly better right now.
Certainly. But if you look at... I mean, Washington has Boston to end the year. They have 2 games against Montreal. Mm-hmm. They have 2 games against Ottawa. You know, and they have a game against the Jets, and they have a game against the Leafs.
Right, but Drew, here, you know, as far as the Jets' schedule goes, they've got a great schedule. They've got 7 mm-hmm. out of 9 yep. games at home. They've got the Sabres twice. They've got the Hurricanes. They've got the Lightning.
Yep.
Those are bottom teams in the Eastern Conference. They just don't have enough games left.
Wow.
You throw out all the cliches about must wins and 4-point games. You have to win your next 2 games against the Buffalo Sabres and the Philadelphia Flyers this afternoon. That's actually a must win.
If you go 7-2 and the Capitals go 7-4, you get the spot because you have more regulation wins.
Right.
Provided there's not a huge difference there in terms of when they win those games.
Or the Caps losing in 3-point games or whatever.
That's what I mean, yeah. So, but that 7-4, this is a team that's 7-2-1 in their last 10, Washington.
Agreed, and I mean, for the Jets to go 7-2, I mean, the Jets have had a streak like that maybe twice in the last 2 years, last December when they had all those home games
mm-hmm.
that they performed well in, and then the last, say the month before this last one in Winnipeg.
And that's the problem. You have to play exceptionally well and then get breaks.
And it's not to say that the Jets can't do it, but what they've done is they've just put themselves in a situation when you're in a 48-game season and you lose 5 games in a row,
right.
And you haven't separated yourself because you haven't taken advantage of those opportunities. I mean, look back at the 2 home games against the Washington Capitals when they really could have made a 6-point lead in the Southeast Division, a 10-point lead. When you haven't taken advantage of those, you've put yourself in a situation where you've played more games than a lot of teams that you're chasing. So you've got 9 games left, and if you lose 1 or 2 games here, then your odds, those stats that we're talking about, it goes down and down and down. So they have to go on a streak. They don't go on a streak. It's lights out.
I mean, how many times, I don't know the stat, but how many times have teams lost 5 games in a row without getting a point for even an overtime loss.
It's so rare in this NHL because you pretty much get a point for showing up.
Yeah.
At least, you know, so many games go into overtime or go into a shootout and end 3-2 that it's almost, to lose five in a row, clean five in a row, it is relatively unheard of in this day and age. And not even, and they haven't even been competitive in any of those games.
What
game have they been the most competitive in the last 2 weeks?
Let's go over the game by game. You got to pull up the schedule here.
Well, with the Washington games.
I got the schedule. Well, no, let's not talk about that.
Well, start from when I left. This is my first home game back, and I left right after that Boston game when they won against Boston on that Tuesday night.
Wow, that was a long time ago.
Out of the last five games, guys, the most competitive game was, of course, the Rangers when they blew the 5-3, and then they allowed the shorthanded goal from Callahan. And that was the game. Otherwise, they really haven't been showing up too well.
Well, the game last Saturday versus the Hurricanes was a very bad performance for the Winnipeg Jets.
So you got the two Washington games?
No, Richie's right. I mean, the game against the New York Rangers that started this last road trip was the game that they were probably... the most competitive in. The Islanders game was awful.
The Tampa game that they won.
Hold on, Drew, you're going back further because they beat Carolina and then they beat Tampa. I'm talking Pittsburgh on.
Okay, right. And that was,
the last five
10 days ago. Yeah, they haven't been good. I mean, there's only so many ways you can say it, and I guess that's what we're doing right now. But they have to reverse the trend starting today. I mean, really, it starts with that, and they've been poor in afternoon games, but this really is the one where they can turn it around. I mean, you talk about going on a 7-game run. It starts today, right?
Yeah, you're on national television today. I talk about it all the time. You're on national television. The country's watching. And let me tell you something. People are watching the Jets now more than ever. Why? Because Toronto, Ottawa, all those teams, they're in the playoff race. They want to see Philly lose, or they want to see Winnipeg lose, whatever it may be. I mean, maybe they're not specifically concerned about the Jets because they see Jersey and Islanders and Rangers, but they could be, and the Leafs or the Senators could be playing the Jets in the first round if all the dominoes fall for the Jets.
Well, if the Jets finish third and the Caps finish eighth and it keeps the Rangers or it keeps the Flyers out of the playoffs, so a lot of those other teams are a lot happier about that. You're telling me that if you're the Leafs and you finish sixth, you'd rather be playing the Jets in third as the Southeast Division champs than the Capitals as the Southeast Division champs.
Yeah. Or the Habs.
Well, exactly. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to review our Jets over-under predictions from earlier this year. You're listening to TSN 1290, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment of the program is brought to you by the Elite Sports Injury Clinic. Regardless of your talent level or how it happened, if you suffer pulls, tears, strains, or spasms, all of which Ezzy is currently going through with his back injury, Elite Sports Injury Clinic is your destination to get you back to health. Three convenient locations throughout Winnipeg means Elite Sports Injury Clinic is right around the corner and available to get you back and on the playing field, or I guess in Ezzy's case, the playing couch. I don't know.
Okay, Drew.
Drew, a little rusty there, eh?
Check them out online at physiowinnipeg.com. Gentlemen, at the beginning of the year, we did a Winnipeg Jets over-under throughout the course of the season. We've sort of been reviewing what our predictions were. We'll continue to do that for the next 10 or so minutes. At the beginning of the year, we predicted, obviously, a 48-game season. We said over-under Winnipeg Jets getting 24 wins this year. Both you and Ezzy selected over. The Jets have 18 wins so far. Do they get that 24-win threshold? Six wins.
It's funny because if they pass it, they'll get into the playoffs.
Or maybe into the playoffs, depending on how other teams play.
I think if they go 7-2,
they make it.
I really do, regardless of whatever everything else that happens. Because they're beating up on some of those teams that they're competing with.
Yeah, but the teams that are ahead of them right now, remember, they don't control their own destiny.
I know they don't control their own destiny, but,
only you control your own destiny.
That's right. Some of them do play each other. Yeah, Drew, you're probably right about that. I want to more review them than change. I don't think we do change.
No, we're not changing. We're just reviewing them. So do you think they make it to that threshold?
Probably not.
So you don't think they don't go a minimum 6-3?
Well, 6-3 is a push.
Do they go 6-3?
Maybe 6-3.
Okay.
You know what? I think the Jets will reach that.
Okay.
So I think the Jets can go 6-3.
So you think they turn this thing around? Is what you're saying?
Right. And 6-3 might not be enough. I don't. I would say they won't go 7-2, but I think they can go 6-3. It's different to say will, but I'll say they will.
The schedule sets up for them.
7 of 9 at home. You've got the Sabres twice, both games that you can win. You've got the Panthers, Lightning, Hurricanes. They can beat the Islanders. They've beat the Islanders at home earlier this year. So I think they can go 6-3.
48 points is where we set the over-under on for the Winnipeg Jets. They have 38 points so far this season. Do they get 10 points in the next 9 games?
A point a game in this day and age. Yeah, I mean, they can still go what?
They can go 5.
Yeah.
They can go, they can go 3-3 and 3 and get to that. And get to that or actually, they don't get to the benchmark at 3-3-3. But
I do think they're going to get that threshold.
Evander Kane, 20 goals. He's got 13 so far this season.
Well, I mean, Drew, he's a streaky scorer, and he does, he certainly has gone through spurts. He's been a cold streak lately, so you think maybe he's due. I know I said over before the season began. We're at 13 right now. He's 7 in his last 9 games. The odds are against him, but kind of a feeling that he might get close.
Yeah, he's either going to get close or not too far over, but He has to start scoring. He knows that. The entire hockey world knows that. And I think he will because, you look at Evander Kane and he always gets opportunities. He always creates room for himself. So I think he's going to do it.
Continuing on, Blake Wheeler. We set the over-under at 35 points. He's at 28 so far.
Yeah, I think he probably gets there.
Again, 7. He needs, just like Kane needed 7 goals in the last 9 games, Wheeler needs 7 points in the last 9 games.
7 points. It's a lot easier to get points than goals.
Certainly, of course.
And that line is due to have a couple points. I think he gets, again, I don't know, you set these numbers? Or is it Vegas?
No, I set these numbers.
It's pretty good.
True. Thank you. I have some skill.
Yeah.
Not a lot. Yeah. Some.
No, I think he's going to be really close. I think he just gets there.
Yeah, I think he definitely gets there, and especially because Blake Wheeler has had so many multi-point games. He's the type of guy that, will break out and he's had a lot of multi-point games over the last few years especially. So, yeah, absolutely, he's going to get over that threshold.
Andrew Ladd, I had set the over-under at 30 points. He's already at 33, so we know that he's already
Richie, looks like Richie said
threshold.
Under, and this guy right here said over.
Yeah, that's
look
true.
Look at the big brain on me.
Guess what, big brain? You're about to fall right off your horse, because we set Olli Jokinen's threshold at 35 points, and you said he'd be over that. He's got 12 this year.
I think he can still do it. 23 points in 9 games. That's just an average of, 2.7 or something per game. No, but, Olli Jokinen is obviously not going to hit that. And, he struggled big time offensively. Hopefully, he can get it going and he can help his team get into the playoffs. And, no one wants to see him struggle. And it's not something that anybody really expected. At least I didn't. I thought the move was good. But, it's turned out that he's really struggled offensively. And there's not too much you can say. You have to hope that he finishes strong here. I guess that's all you can say, right?
Adam Under, at least Drew,
Yeah.
Drew loves throwing out your bad predictions, right? He doesn't like throwing out anyone when you're successful, right, Remus?
Well, your odds are 50-50.
It's more fun when you're wrong.
That's true.
Dustin Byfuglien, he has 21 points this year. Yeah. His over-under was set at 30 points. You both predicted over.
Yeah.
Can he get 9-9?
That's tough for a defenseman. I thought he'd have a better offensive year than he's had. I realize he missed a few games there, so he's missed 5, but That's going to be extremely difficult to get to that threshold.
If I remember correctly, we predicted that he would miss a few games.
Yeah, and I still thought he'd be more more proficient offensively.
Yeah. He's missed, 7 games this year?
5.
I'm sorry, 5. So, yeah, I mean, even with those, it's going to be tough, to get in there. But I'd have to say he's probably not going to get there, but he'll probably end up in between 24, 27, something like that.
Toby Enstrom, 25 points. He's got 15 so far. Obviously, the injury really affected that. Not going to get 10 points in 9 games.
No, likely not. I mean, him and Byfuglien both. I mean, to keep a point a game pace for that long, I mean, they might need that to get to 7-2, though.
I got to give Richie credit on that one, though. The way Enstrom, remember earlier on in the season, Enstrom was leading all defensemen in points. He had 13 points in 13 games, if I'm not mistaken, back in, late January, early February. So my prediction at the time was looking pretty good, but that injury really kind of foiled that plan.
Continuing on, we go to Andre Pavlik, 38 games started is where we set the over-under. He's at 34 games started so far.
We knew he was going to get a lot of starts, eh? He's probably going to hit that 4 out of 9. I think it's pretty safe to say he'll end up at 38 starts.
I would suggest so. Unless something happens in terms of injury, I think he's going to exceed that benchmark. And that just goes to show you how many games he's... I mean, the guy's going to play 40 or, 41 out of 48 games.
What were the predictions, Drew?
The predictions were both... We had them both being over that. Yeah. So, the next four... I expect he's going to break that in the next four games. The next six are at home. There's no reason... if you haven't started Al Montoya previously on back-to-back situations and in some other situations that seem to be relatively obvious that they'd be, the backup goaltender games, now that you've got this break in the schedule, you're not gonna run Montoya out there at this point. Andrei Pavlik, 20 wins. He's got 15 wins on the year so far. You both predicted over.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm gonna say he
5-4.
Yeah, he's got to win
6-3. Needs
to
do it
to pass it. So. I think he will do it. I think the Jets can win 6 of their last 9 games and get in the playoffs. I know everyone's negative these days. Everyone's listening, driving their cars, and they want to drive their cars off the bridge right now listening to me speak about the Jets. But, I mean, I think that the Jets can do it and win 6 of their last 9, which would give Pavlik 21 wins.
Zach Bogosian, the final one, we had him at 30 games played. Richie, you had over. Ezzy, you had under. He's played 27 so far. Yep. Again, barring an injury at this point, he came back and he's given the Jets... he'll probably give the Jets, the majority of the season on the back end there.
He's a horse, right? So once he came back, I mean, he plays big minutes. He doesn't seem to tire easily. And, once he's back, he's hard to get out of that lineup. And I did think he would come back about when, mid-February when he came back. And everything looked like it was good to go. And he had a lot of time to recover. So I thought he'd keep it going here and play more than that threshold there, Drew.
Yeah, and I think, what's impressed me the most about Bogo this year is his defensive game's gotten better. He might not have as many points as he'd like, but he's been very solid defensively, and he's been in the top four all year for the Jets. Well, most of the year, 27, mm-hmm. Out of 39 games. So that's been really nice to see because, going forward, he's RFA coming up this year. He's one of the guys that factors into the long-term plans of the Jets.
That's the end of this segment. When we come back, we're going to do the keys of the game for the Jets Flyers contest coming up at 2 o'clock. A big congratulations, our final Illegal Curve hat giveaway. He's been tweeting at us all show. Roaring Finnegan is going to win the final Illegal Curve hat. He says the only thing that's guaranteed is he'll be watching all their games. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
The Rock says.
WrestleMania tomorrow, of course. Ezzy and Remus are both very excited about that.
And Hustler.
Yeah,
his wrestling show with John Waldman.
You're having a little bit of a WrestleMania party, is that what I understand, Ezzy?
Yeah, it's at your condo, though.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. I won't be there. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah. The Rock, The Undertaker.
Drew is Mr. Imperfect.
That's going to be a good one.
Two shots at me, but who's counting?
Yeah, very excited.
Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday morning. Of course, Blue Jays baseball before WrestleMania tomorrow. Blue Jays baseball here on this station, 11:30 with the pregame show. First pitch, I believe, 12:05 tomorrow. The Jets and the Red Sox. The Jays and the Red Sox tomorrow on TSN 1290. R.A. Dickey against John Lester. Hell of a pitching matchup. Hopefully, if the Jays win today, it's the deciding rubber match of the series, but we'll see how that ends up.
Well, Drew, you better nail this last segment, or I'm going to give you the cross-faced chicken wing.
This segment is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association is the largest, fastest-growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org or give them a call at 204-477-1256. The CGA Association of Manitoba, we see more than numbers.
Yes, he'll be the only person to give the cross-faced chicken wing while eating a chicken wing.
I knew Richie was going to, couldn't hold back there. I don't know how you got through that segment sponsorship, Drew, but yeah.
Because I'm a professional. I might be Mr. Imperfect, but I'm a professional. Keys to the game between the Jets and Flyers. Puck drop 2 o'clock here on TSN 1290. Dennis Bayak, Shane Knighty, and Brian Munns with the call. What's your number one key to the game, Richie?
Well, you know, we talked, when the Flyers were in town earlier this season about exposing their defense, but that, I think more than ever now it's exposing that defense. And it's and look at the back end there. And last game, Lauridsen and Shannon Huskins, Gustafson, Gervais, and Kimmo Timonen. I think what you need to be able to do is expose that defense wide. And we talked about it last time, but the Jets do have some speed on the wings. You know, that's whether that's Blake Wheeler or Vander Kane. You have to expose this team wide, I think. Drive wide. And whether you want to take points, you want to create offense off the rush or drive wide and then create a cycle game, which the Jets rarely do, I think that's going to be the most important key to this game. And one other point I think is important, not only driving wide in terms of the wings on the Flyers' defense, but the Flyers have a really good transition offense. I mean, if you can get the puck, you have to take the puck. When you're the Jets, you have to put the puck in deep and work on the defense again, because if you're not doing that and you're turning the puck over in the neutral zone, the Flyers will go tic-tac-toe net. And they're very good offensive team, and they're very good passing and quick transition, quick strike team. So the Jets' key is driving that puck wide if you have the opportunity, or putting it in deep and getting on the defenseman quickly. Because this defense, if pressured, is going to have trouble moving that puck up the ice. But if you give anybody time in the NHL, they'll pick you apart. This isn't a defense like, you know, that has guys on the back end who can quickly go back and pick up the puck and get it out of their own zone. This is not the kind of defense that you're dealing with.
It's not a fast transition defense.
That's right. And so if you can take advantage of that, those are my two keys to the game from a Jets perspective.
Ezzy?
I think, you know, broadly speaking, it's to play a more structured style of play with Byfuglien back on defense today. And, you know, as far as, you know, a key to the game being more specific to this game, and this goes a little bit to what Richie just mentioned, I think it's getting the power play going. If the Jets are going to get into the playoffs, they're going to have to win 6 or 7 of their last 9 games. And they haven't scored a power play goal, and I don't have it off the top of my head, but it's been a long time since they scored a power play goal. It's been struggling for a long time. And I think that the Jets have a lot of speed off the wings, especially now with Mike Santorelli in the lineup. James Wright might be in the lineup today. We haven't confirmed it yet.
He's off IR. We mentioned that before. There's no game day skate, so any lineup changes, any
game time
will be during the pregame skate. We'll have those for you on our Twitter page at Illegal Curve.
Yeah, I think it's really, you know, Richie mentioned the speed, and I think, you know, when you have guys like Kent Huskins and Bruno Gervais, they're not the fastest guys. I think guys like Evander Kane and Blake Wheeler can take advantage of that. They can draw penalties. You know, we talked about earlier in the show Evander Kane taking penalties, but I think he can draw penalties against this team. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And then, you know, it's taking those opportunities and capitalizing on them. Get the power play going. I really think that the Jets can get that power play going. That'll give them a spark. And they need to, you know, start this 6-game homestand off with a big win. Get it going here. It'll give them a lot of confidence. So I think that's, you know, for me, that's a big key to this game.
Yeah, Drew, that is a huge key. The problem, of course, is that you're playing a team in Philadelphia that's both great on the power play and pretty good on the penalty kill as well, which is the direct opposite of what the Jets are. So if the Jets are going to get it going today on special teams, the odds are kind of stacked against them in that regard.
You know, the Jets will have an easier time with, you know, Coburn out and Timonen possibly out.
Absolutely.
Anthony Sanfilippo didn't confirm it, but it's possible. That's their number one pair.
He's a game-time decision.
Yeah, that's their number one pair right there, Braden Coburn and Kimmo Timonen. So with those two guys out of the lineup, especially when you've got, you know, Oliver Lauridsen, you know, as a kind of a guy who doesn't have a lot of NHL experience, you can take advantage of that.
Santorelli is a guy, I thought he played pretty well in his first game, but this is the kind of game that he would succeed in because he's a fast winger.
Yep.
And that's what you can expose this team on. So if you can put the puck in deep, or I think with him, or create it off the rush, because he's not the biggest guy in the corners, I think this could be a game where you could see the newcomer possibly get on the board.
If James Wright is back in the lineup for the Jets, and I would sort of expect that if he's healthy, he'd be back in the lineup. Who comes out from the forward group, in your opinion?
Well, Byfuglien's coming back on defense. So what I said in my game day preview on IllegalCurve.com, I'm just speculating here, because, you know, Claude Noel said he will make changes. With Byfuglien coming back on defense, what I said is either Klitsam or Postma comes out, and then either James Wright or Wellwood goes back into the lineup. That's what I was speculating on. So I think that Wellwood or Wright would either go on the second or third line right wing position. And then you have to make a few moves around. Like Gagnon was playing center on the fourth line. But I like, to be honest with you guys, a lot of people were saying that maybe Burmistrov will go up to the second line. Mm-hmm. I really like Burmistrov with Tangrady and Santorelli. I really thought that was a good line. I know that Shane Knighty also thought that was a good line. He mentioned that in the post-game show. So I kind of like that line to stay together, but I think you're going to see the lines a lot different than what I'm predicting them to be.
And you ask, you know, which guys to come out, Drew. You could pick Gannon, you could pick Thorburn, you could pick Mietten, and I think two of those guys come out, and Wellwood and Wright go in.
And on the defense, do you expect, with Bufflin going back to the D, do you expect it to be Postma out of the lineup? Do you expect it to be Klitsam? Does Derek Meach get in? You know, how long does Artis Kolda keep sitting around for?
I mean, you got a lot of defensemen, and they aren't that great. So, I mean, that's the truth, though, and that's kind of your issue. I take Klitsam out. I keep Postma in.
Let's wrap it up.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock, only because Ezra Ginsberg stole your cheer last week.
Yes, of course, and apparently I'm stealing Ezra's cheer this week, which is a cheer to Zach Redmond, whose miraculous return, as it's been stated, in terms of the skate cut that he incurred in Carolina. He's back on the ice. Everybody's so excited to see him back, and regardless of, you know, the hockey player, regardless of his ability in the future, whatever it may be, the fact that he's just on the ice and the job that everybody did to help him get there is tremendous, and that certainly deserves my cheer this week.
That scar that was on Twitter yesterday that he showed off was just, I mean, words really can't express that scar.
Richie isn't really going to steal my cheer. I have to cheer Zach Redmond. I mean, I know Richie cheered him, but I just have to. I mean, he's back on the ice. You know, Dr. Peter McDonald, who is the head team physician, said it was 50-50 whether he would play hockey at all. And, you know, it just really is a great story. I have to give it to Redmond because, you know, he factors into the long-term plans of the Jets. And, Drew, you mentioned the scar. You know, and there was the incisions. You know, people forget that, you know, he actually had incisions that weren't just the skate cut. It was because they had to reduce the blood, you know, flowing and all that. But it just is a really great story. That's what sports is really all about at the end of the day. It's not, you know, we get fixated on wins and losses, but really it's about, you know, participation, really athleticism and, you know, great stories like this. So it's one of those stories that, you know, just really touches your heart. And, you know, for that reason, I got to give it to Zach Redmond.
Didn't Dr. McDonald do your surgery?
Yeah, that's right. He did my knee surgery.
So do you think he goes around talking about, you know, it was a really successful surgery with Redmond? Do you think he talks about you the same way?
Well, he doesn't because, as you know, he... I didn't do my physiotherapy, so Dr. Peter McDonald probably doesn't use me as, you know, as a case study. Well, I mean, he might use it as a case study on how not to recover from a knee injury, but... Yeah.
There was no fault to Peter McDonald about... the surgery was a success, just the patient was a bit of a problem in the aftermath.
Yeah.
I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer and a belated happy birthday to Dale Hawerchuk. He turned 50 a couple days ago, so one of the great all-time Winnipeg Jets. He turned 50, so a belated happy birthday to Dale Hawerchuk.
Yeah. You turned 50 25 years ago, Drew, so that's... I like that cheer. That's a great cheer. Happy birthday to Ducky.
That's it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. A big thank you to all of our sponsors, Bernstein's Deli, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, the Linden Market Dental Center, Elite Sports Injury Clinic, and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. A big thank you to our guests, Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch and Anthony Sanfilippo of PhiladelphiaFlyers.com. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download. Subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. You can also find the show on the TSN 1290 website. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You still have time to get in your Illegal Curve game-winning goal predictions and your Illegal Curve 50-50 predictions. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com. For producer Tim and producer Michael Remus, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell, Wednesday night, 6 p.m., NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Until then, if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290, your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.